Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Jerry McGovern, the author of Worldwide Waste, and that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. This episode is brought to you by Hover. Register a domain name for your design portfolio and choose from over 300 domain name extensions. No matter what area of the creative space you're in, there is a domain name waiting for it, from .design and .art to .inc, .photo, and more. Check them out at hover.com/UIbreakfast. Hi, Jerry.
Hello, Jane.
Thanks so much for joining us on this very important topic. We're excited to have you again.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm very happy to be back.
The last time we spoke was 2 years ago, I think, and we were talking about good old UX stuff, such as the customer top tasks, your previous big topic. So what made you switch to the environmental problems?
I think partly, Jane, it's a little bit of an evolution in that, you know, what I was focused in top tasks was prioritization and really, you know, getting an understanding of what mattered. And in doing a lot of the top task projects, I noticed there was an awful lot of waste that occurred in the digital environment. If we'd be working on an intranet, for example, we'd often find that we needed to delete 80% of the intranet in order to make it useful and stuff findable. And then we'd see all these internal systems. There'd be 6 or 8 different training systems. So a lot of waste in systems, a lot of waste in content, and equally in, you know, public websites. I've done a lot of work over the years for Microsoft, and somebody once told me that they estimated they had about 15 million pages on Microsoft.com and that 4 million of them had never been accessed. And I began to think, well, why create those pages? All the effort, all the energy, all the waste that's going into that for nothing. And so the thinking in my brain said, well, there's a lot of waste going on here in digital, and that's a real challenge for the environment. The environment is under so much stress and pressure from humans, and part of the reason is that we have become so extraordinarily wasteful in the last 50 years or so.
Could you recap the key events that led to what we have these days? Well, one example is clearly the broadband connections available everywhere, now that we can stream and store enormous amount of information in the cloud. Any other milestones that you think made us so wasteful when it comes to digital?
Well, I think the nature of digital, Jane, in the sense of it's so easy to copy, create a copy, and to duplicate. So, you know, and that digital is this transient type of environment. So we always feel we need to duplicate and create copies of things and create versions. And it's just so easy. We were talking before we started this about taking photographs, how much easier it is to take a photograph today. In fact, it's really easy to take 10 photographs. You hit the wrong feature and you've taken 10 or 20 snapshots. And in these backup systems, when you're editing, if you're editing graphics, they often now save everything you've edited. So you've got versions and versions and versions, and you can go theoretically back to those if you want to. So we're constantly creating copies and duplicating and you know, just generating stuff. I read a report there just in the last couple of days that said by 2025, we'll have about 100 or 200 zettabyte of data. Now, zettabytes are unbelievable quantities of data. I calculated that if you were to print out a zettabyte of data, that would require about 20 trillion trees in the amount of paper that would actually be required. Now, there's only 3 trillion trees left on the planet. So you'd need essentially seven times the number of trees, every single tree on this planet, to print out one zettabyte. And by, you know, 2025, we'll have potentially around 200. And by 2035, 2,000 zettabyte of data. So, you know, we've got this absolute explosion of data, and all of it's fed from these little behaviors, whether taking too many photographs or, of course, on the other side, we've Internet of Things, which creates ginormous quantities of data. So we've got this huge explosion. And then devices, we've 10 billion smartphones since 2007. So we have this desire or need to own devices. It's not enough to have one digital device. We want multiple digital devices. So we've got this explosion of digital devices, an explosion of digital data.
The deceptive feeling is that when we are, quote unquote, saving trees and saving a digital copy instead of having a paper one, we get this deceptive feeling that we're doing a good thing. So how can we find that balance between, I don't know, well, basically trying to digitize everything we have so that we save physical space, and on the other hand, we don't go crazy wasteful in digital?
Yeah, and it is that balance, Jane, in the sense of you can definitely use digital in a way that is positive for the environment. But even there, we need to calculate. So you kind of automatically assume that if you read books digitally, that's by definition good. Well, not necessarily. It depends how many books you read. Most of energy, and therefore most of the waste that is associated with digital, is associated with the devices. So about 80% of the pollution or the energy in an environment is connected with the actual devices and the manufacture of those devices, the creation. So the energy to create digital products is quite significant. So there's quite a significant amount of energy required to create chips and digital type products. So our computers and our smartphones, as soon as we've got them, we've already done 80% of the pollution. So 80% of the lives of that products has already gone up a chimney or gone into a river or wherever. And therefore, if you don't read quite a few books, it's not cheaper. It's not better for the environment to basically read on an e-reader. It would be better if you only buy 5 or 10 books a year. It would be better to buy 5 or 10 physical books than to buy an e-reader and then download 10 e-books. And I don't think we're conscious of those decisions. And we always think it's automatically much better. Yes, a conference call is very significantly orders of magnitude better than driving or taking a plane. But if you start having a conference call with 100 people on the call, and you start having 5 or 6 or 7 of those a day, and your company starts replicating that per employee, and you start storing all that, the recordings, and you start looking at the equipment, and some of the meetings rooms have 72-inch screens on which the video is presented, and you're going for high-definition video, and all these, you start making decisions that really start substantially adding to the weight that's actually occurring. So over time, you may not be making such wise decisions as, you know, you could be, certainly if you were more cognizant of the impacts of various types of decisions in digital on pollution and on energy.
We actually had a conversation about similar topics a while ago here on the show, and that was episode 140 with James Christie. We talked about sustainable UX. And we were talking about optimizing your products, your websites for to minimize the data transferred and minimize the footprint. But the topic we're tackling today is much wider because we tackle all these different ways of wasting. Could you give us an overview? So you mentioned that, let's say, driving is somewhere on the top of the list of wasting energy.
Yeah, if you say, you know, airline taking a long haul flight is, you know, is extremely one of the most wasteful things. And I've done a lot, taken a lot of those long haul flights over the years. And certainly driving, of course, it does depend on the type of car you're using. I mean, basically, it's physics. It's the weight that's being transferred and the speed at which that weight that is being transferred is the energy cost that's actually occurring. So, you know, the greater the weight, the greater the waste that actually occurs. And the energy required to lift people off this earth is very, very substantial. To lift that weight off the earth in an airplane is very, very substantial. So you've got, you know, the extreme of taking the flights to, you know, the most energy efficient would be a text message. So, mm-hmm. you know, the type of communication that has the lowest weight is text. Text is like the ultimate compression technique in human communication. So if you're looking for the most environmentally friendly form of communication, it is text. You know, the next, and there's a bit of a jump up, is, you know, is audio. So an hour of reading text might be at maximum 50 kilobyte, you know, in actual weight. An hour of audio is about 30 megabyte. So there's a huge difference. But an hour of standard high definition, standard definition video would be about 300. And high definition video would be anywhere from 1 gigabyte to 1.5 or 2 gigabytes. So we're scaling up as, you know, and then you got these crazy things that are occurring today where we're getting 4K or 8K. We're getting levels of resolution, which the eye can't even see. And if you move from a 4K resolution to an 8K resolution, you don't double the weight, you treble the weight in the actual weight of those files. So if a 4K image is 20 megabyte, you know, the same image as 8K would be 60 megabyte. In the process. And the tragedy of so much of this is it makes absolutely no difference. We can't see this unless we are putting this image up on Times Square, you know, in you know, 50 meter billboards or whatever. We are not going to notice. The eye cannot notice the actual difference. So these are all sorts of decisions. Even this podcasting. Like I was doing a little bit of experimenting in, you know, the difference between an MP3 and a WAV file is again a factor of 10, typically in weight. So a WAV would be 10 times greater than an MP3. So I started asking some journalists, what did they use when they were recording audio, particularly if they had to travel or they were out at incidents? And the majority of the journalists I talked to said they always used MP3 because for a whole range of reasons, one of them being, you know, transferring it back to the office, and this is the BBC or whatever, in the evening, obviously transferring 30 megabyte versus 300 megabyte is much faster and easier. And they said that, you know, WAVs, unless you're talking about music or complicated audio, you're not going to notice a difference if you edit. So some people, what they'll do is they'll record in WAV and then they'll edit in WAV and then they'll save to MP3. And they think that that's better. Now, I did an experiment and I recorded a voice in MP3 and I recorded a voice in WAV. And then I edited that voice in MP that I recorded in MP3, and I obviously could only save it to MP3. So I saved it. Then I edited the voice in WAV and I saved it to MP3 because, you know, 99% of the audio that we hear on the web is in MP3. And I asked people, could they hear the difference? I did an experiment and nobody could hear the difference. You know, so we're doing all this stuff that actually makes no difference often. It's not that it's making anything better. It's, you know, so if we think about these things more, I think we can identify areas where we can keep doing what we're doing and achieve the exact same results that we're achieving and create less waste.
That is so, so important. And I just was a guest at another show the other day, and I suggested we use our typical setup, which is Zencastr, and we exchange MP3s recorded locally. But that was not enough of a quality for the host. And we did a local recording in QuickTime, and it was sort of a good vibe that they're audio files, in terms of like they really care about the audio quality for their listeners. So it's a double-edged sword, and the community can be kind to either person, the spectrum, but it's really good to think about the environment first, definitely.
And, you know, one of the persons that I showed did the experiment with was an audiophile.
Yeah.
You know, was he had, you know, headphones that only the top engineers have and et cetera, you know, so total audio nut and whatever. And he couldn't hear the difference, you know, like, and see, a lot of this, Jane, is BS, you know, it's just geek BS, you know. years ago, I used to be involved in audio speaker systems and Bose and, you know, and the US magazines always found the American speakers were better, and the British magazines always found the British speakers were better, you know, the sound systems. And most of this is like wine tasters. You know, there is actually no difference. And it's, you're just damaging the planet and creating waste because, just, you know, out of nonsense. And if, you know, people would just grow up and or actually at least do the experiments and testing. Because when you're doing, and I've been involved in music production and stuff over the years, but for audio only, you know, you really don't need WAV files. But again, you know, let's burn some more trees for my ego, seems to be the way it goes. And yeah, oh, I can see an 8K. You know, image. No, you can't. You're lying. You know, but you just want to show off that you've got the latest technology and that you're so cool. And it's funny, a lot of these people then claim they're supportive of improving the climate, but they don't mind wasting in digital.
So one important thought that you mentioned today that really resonated with me was not only about the content that we produce, but also about the devices that we use, and that entails a large part of the waste. Could you give us an overview of how bad the footprint is for both, I guess?
For digital, yeah.
Yeah, for every, let's say, megabyte of data that we A, transfer, B, store, and I don't know, an average phone, yeah. Like what kind of ranges are we talking about in terms of the footprint?
I'll give you some ideas. So I'll start with the devices. So the estimate globally now at the moment, we're creating 50 million metric tons of e-waste, which is enormous. That would cover an area the size of Manhattan in the United States. Less than 20% of that is recycled. So a lot of it becomes poisonous and really highly damaging waste. And that's expected to double over the next 10 years. 10 billion smartphones, that includes 10 billion smartphones that have been manufactured since 2007. Now, electrical or digital type products, as I was saying earlier, most of the waste they create in their lifetime is created during the manufacture, typically about 80% of the waste. So the other huge problem with electrical, digital type products is, particularly digital products, is they've got a very short life cycle. So if you've got a type of product that creates a lot of waste during its manufacture and has a very short life cycle, you've got a perfect storm of waste creation, because you've got something which created a lot of waste in order to create it, and you're not using it for very long. So we've got very high energy input and very low life cycle outputs. So we're using a lot of energy to create products that have very short lives. It seems counterintuitive. You think that the more energy you put into something, the longer that thing will last. Well, for a whole range of reasons, digital products have extremely short life cycles. Like, in practically no other area would you say that something that is 2 years old is old. You know, imagine saying your child, what age is your child? My child's two. Oh, that's a really old child. You know, are you going to change your child when he's five? He's five. Oh, you know, should be retiring at five. You know, no other environment. So we've got this incredible growing production. And this is nothing to what is going to happen with the Internet of Things. We are going to flood the world with waste and these gadgets that are going to last, these sensors, how long are they going to last? 2, 3, 4, 5 years? You know, and then we're going to flood the world with billions of these sensors. So we've got tremendous problems coming up in the device environment. In the data environment, data is absolutely exploding. Like, as I said, zettabytes of data. We've produced more data in the last 2 years than in all of previous civilization. And it's absolutely, totally exploding. I calculated that, say, if you had the average size of a web page now, unfortunately, is somewhere between 3 and 4 megabyte. And it was only half a megabyte 10 or 15 years ago. So if you were to download that page about 600,000 times, according to the calculations I did, which are actually very, very, very conservative. If you look at website Carbon Calculator and other environments, they use much more aggressive metrics in relation to the amount of CO2 produced by a gigabyte of data. But if you, based on my calculation, you would create 10 kg of CO2 with 600,000 downloads. And that's the equivalent of what one tree, a reasonable average tree, can sequester over a 12-month period. So, you know, the data is, it seems, you know, a megabyte, very little, it's fractional, yeah, but it all adds up. And when you get into zettabytes of data, you really begin to see the consequences of managing this sort of data. And what's happening as well is we're producing so much data, we can't store it. It's like we've got these pipes coming out of these factories just with pure waste. So we're using this energy to create data that we can't store. So it goes straight to waste. So it's not even the data has been used in any sort of beneficial way. It's just energy to create the data, and then it's not even stored. So that's total waste in an environment. And nobody in the technology industry really cares. They talk about, you know, being green and all that sort of stuff and renewable. But it's not an energy production problem we have. It's a waste production problem we have.
As regular daily consumers, design professionals, product people, what kind of habits can we adopt in daily life when it comes to digital waste that will minimize it?
Yeah, like with our normal habits. Yeah, think about waste. So like your mother might have said to you, like my mother said to me, don't waste not, want not, was the saying in Ireland. You know, eat the food. So we try every week had to have no waste in our food. So we try to, you know, my wife, myself, that we don't throw anything away. So we don't waste things. So if you think of digital from a waste point of view, let's try and minimize the waste. So what would be an example of wasteful behavior? Well, let's have a look at those web pages for a moment. And so how are those 4 megabytes made up? Well, often JavaScript is a significant component, and JavaScript has a much bigger impact than just its actual weight, because JavaScript is code. So JavaScript is not just creating waste in its download. As soon as it's downloaded, it triggers energy consumption in the computer in the form of processing. So it's a significant source of energy consumption. So a lot of people will just package all their JavaScript into one package and download it to every page, regardless of how much of that page requires of that JavaScript. So if we look and we say, what does this page need? What do these pages need? And we only send to them what they actually need. So if they only need, you know, a slice of bread and a banana, you know, don't send them 50 slices of bread and 20 bananas. You know, just send them a banana and a slice of bread. You know, think of, you know, and if they're not using these fonts and the CSS, you know, we do the same thing with CSS where it's used. It's often just a single package, even though a particular page only requires a small component of that. And that's, why do we do that? It's the same reason why we buy disposable meals. It's convenient for us. You know, it takes more effort to buy the fruit and vegetables, to cook them and to do them properly. You know, it's much easier just to pick up the plastic, you know, and that disposable meal. So it's developer convenience. It's designer convenience. But let's reduce the waste. So thinking about, and if we look at our images, are they are significant contributors to waste. Are they properly optimized? Not just quickly sent through a package. Have you really looked at, gone to that extra effort to optimize it properly? Because I've seen situations where you can, you know, take another 50% or 70% of weight out of it, and it'll still look great in the process. And videos, you know, looking at videos are hugely energy intensive in relation to everything else. So do we need videos? You know, in many situations, I've done a lot of work over the years in technology companies like Cisco, and certainly in a technical support environment, you don't need videos 90% of the time. You need really well structured content and code samples, et cetera, et cetera. But you don't need videos. Sometimes you do need videos for how-tos, you know, but if we're always going towards the least wasteful thing, which is the word, you know, the text. If we can get it done in text, do it in text. You know, if we have to go up to images, go to images for sure. It's not saying not, but it's making conscious decisions and saying, well, this is more wasteful, but actually there's a better communication here happening. We actually, people understand better. So think about the waste. Always be looking for waste in the digital environment. And a lot of times waste is weight, although not always when we're talking about programming. There's the waste often occurs in the actions that occur when that thing is downloaded. So there's lots of stuff. And tracking, why do we track? Most websites don't need analytics. And I might as well be saying something blasphemous, but I've been doing this work since the mid-90s. And most websites I deal with never really needed website analytics because they never did anything useful with it, anything to begin with. I've been in so many teams that look, oh, we had 10,000 visitors this week and we had 11,000 visitors last week, and they looked at this page and looked, so what? You're not going to do anything different. It's not useful. And if you don't need it, don't do it. And if you're not tracking, that reduces waste, and it's, of course, good in many other environments. So really look at the things you're doing and ask, are they actually useful? well, maybe we need to track some stuff, but we collect a whole load of tracking stuff that 90% of which we don't use. Well, let's just not collect the stuff that we don't use, and that is saved. So there's loads of decisions we can make, but it requires a change in consciousness and thinking and the way we look at the world. And I think that consciousness is changing the way we look at the physical world. And we just need to bring that change of consciousness that we brought to the physical world and bring it to the digital world as well.
The tracking, you just hit a very big pinpoint there. As a founder of a software product at UserList, we help founders track user activity inside their product. And we suggest that founders only send very important information. For example, I don't know, the number of projects the person has as a property, and like, that's it. On the other hand, some JavaScript tools, they allow to track every page view, which is just a stream of senseless data that just pollutes everything, including the activity feed of the user.
Exactly.
And on the other hand, there is this issue of privacy. And on another hand, there is this issue of attribution. It's amazing how, as consumers, we want to keep everything in secret. On the other hand, when we become marketers as product people, we're like, oh, we need to solve the attribution problem. We need to know where our leads come from. And it's like a balance of 20 different aspects that we have to strike somehow, right?
There's a balance, yeah. And but I've been involved in marketing for years. Most, I would say at least 90% of the data that marketers collect, they never use. You know, so in a huge number of situations, massive quantities of data collected. And again, you know, a lot of marketing is unfortunately that traditional, you know, volume, lead generation, page views, etc. It's not very productive. It's not very effective for the organization. And it pursues what I call the cult of volume. So, yes, there is useful data that needs to be collected. But in many, many, many situations, we collect far more data than we actually need. And we just collect it because we can. And we're not aware of the consequences that every time we collect that, there's, you know, we are adding to global warming, you know, in a tiny fractional way. But sometimes I say that the most dangerous cost is the cost closest to zero.
Let's not even talk about email, for example.
Yeah.
Because there are so many people who have less awareness about how email works, how email lists work, and they just say, oh, that's spam, and they delete the email instead of being more conscious about subscribing, unsubscribing, leaving your email here or there, removing yourself from the list, actually. It's amazing how little culture there is around that. Yet, even though email's been out there for ages, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I saw a study somewhere, I can't remember the data, about the amount of stuff of, you know, people not unsubscribing, you know, it's churning around there. Like, I mean, I think, what is it? They estimate there's something like 300 billion emails sent a day, you know, and that 150 million of them are either spam or marketing junk, you know, so. We've got, yeah, as you say, a huge, and email attachments, and, you know, 300 billion. And they said that with Slack and everything like that, email was going to be dead. Email's growing. Everything is growing. You know, everything in digital is growing. Nothing goes away. Everything grows and gets bigger and bigger and bigger because we don't think about these issues.
As we are wrapping up today's episode, what are the most impactful recommendations and practices that we can adopt? My takeaway is buy less devices, don't store unnecessary data, or maybe like undergo regular deletion procedures in your backup data or in your archives or something like that. Am I hitting the point? Is there anything else?
Yeah, buy less devices. Hold on to your devices. If the device creates a lot of pollution in its manufacture, then the longer you hold on to it, the less relative damage that pollution has caused. So hold on to your devices as long as possible. Hold on to your data as little as possible. You know, it's kind of like as revert. It's the opposite. Hold on to your device as long as possible, but, you know, hold on to your data as little as possible. Really ask, get into that habit. I try and get into the habit of, you know, what am I going to delete? What am I going to, in, you know, when I'm going and I'm adding somebody to my contact database, I always try and say, is there somebody I can get rid of? You know, so always looking also, what can I remove today? What can I take away today? What do I not need? And if you do that on a conscious level, on a daily level, then it doesn't become this impossible thing, because a lot of people say, oh, this is impossible. I can't do this. I've got too many files. I can't. You know, so you have to start somewhere. You know, you start in your daily habits. Well, let's start by, you know, not taking as many photographs. Or if we do take that number of photographs, that's fine. Well, let's review them. You know, 8 out of 10 of them are fuzzy or poor quality. Let's remove them. You know, so, you know, this a constant review process, but constantly looking for waste. Wherever there's waste, there is pollution that has no benefit. You know, that there is energy gone to waste for no reason, for no benefit. And that's the worst thing we can do to the planet, to destroy the planet and the future for our children. And it didn't even benefit us. It didn't even help us. We didn't, you know, it didn't make us warmer or cooler. It didn't make us happier. We just created waste without knowing it was there even. So be conscious, hold on to our devices as long as possible, hold on to our data as little as possible.
That's a wonderful recap of everything in one sentence, literally. Thanks so much for sharing your insights.
Thank you, Jane.
Our listeners want to learn more about your learnings, about your studies in this area. Where can they find you online, and where can they get your book?
So jerrymcgovern.com is the website, and the book is there. It's available. You can read it online for free, and then hopefully if you're interested in buying it, there's links to places you can buy it, and you can find it in the major bookstores as well, and Amazon, etc. So it's available reasonably widely online, both as an ebook and as a print book. And I can say to you that the ebook, I really worked to make it the lightest possible weight. It's 10 times lighter than my previous book in its actual physical weight. So when I was writing the book, I really tried to be conscious, and designing the ebook format, I really tried to be conscious to design something that had the minimum waste footprint possible.
That's so great. I wonder, a quick off topic, what do you think of retina displays? Because as a designer, I do think it's the best thing that ever happened to my eyes and to the web typography. But it might be a different thing from the standpoint of resources. What do you think?
It's anything that is more pixels is more data, you know. So it's a trade. I mean, there's also what I've tried to do. You know, I don't use big screens, and I stopped using big screens now. So I often have to use reading glasses on my. I work everything off the laptop. So the smallest the screen, the least the heat and the energy that comes out. So I mean, I don't think we should punish ourselves. You know, if you find that your eyes are not as tired, yeah, there's a logic, and we're not seeking to, it's doing things that actually don't really make any difference. And if we are doing things that have high energy, that we really think about it. So if we are doing videos, we really, you know, we get it into 3 minutes instead of 5 minutes. We really are conscious that every minute in video is, you know, has a significant impact from an energy point of view.
I'm just now thinking about my favorite Zoom's beautifying feature that I guess, wastes enormous resources by smoothing my skin tone in real time over each call. I'm just so guilty.
But yeah,
you know, this popular thing is Zoom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and these are like what I was saying there earlier about, you know, that getting into a habit in these Zoom calls of the first 2 or 3 minutes, use the Zoom to greet and the screen, and then say we'll go to audio, because and most people will be much more comfortable, you know, less stressful, etc. And you don't need to see each other for an hour, you know, on the screen a lot of times. So you meet and greet for the first 2 or 3 minutes, and then you go to audio, and you've saved 90% of the energy that you would have spent if you only stayed with screen.
That's a great tip as well. Well, Jerry, thanks so much again for sharing your wisdom today. It's been very helpful, and I hope it helps our listeners to at least adopt the right mindset when it comes to that. Maybe not perfect, but at least the right mindset.
Absolutely. None of us, we're all struggling to do the right thing.
Well, thank you, Jerry, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week.
Thank you, Jane. The same yourself.